from the time that they pronounced me dead was a good 45 minutes.
They cut my clothes and then they paddled my heart because my heart had stopped. And I could see people screaming and crying, but I didn't realize that was actually my physical body because I was somewhere else.
The only thing that I could feel, if you can imagine, absolute love and peace. There wasn't anything else to be felt.
I was greeted by people I had known in the past.
I'm back home again.
Incredibly safe and felt at home.
Welcome, welcome to Round Trip Death, everybody, and a warm welcome to our very special guests from Texas. And this is Deanna and Jeff Ray. How are you guys?
Doing great today.
We're here. Can't ask for much more.
What part of Texas are you in?
We're in Denton, just outside of Dallas.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to be talking about Deanna's near-death experience in just a second. And I know it's going to be hard. You have not shared this publicly in a forum like this before. And it's hard because Jeff, and this is why I wanted Jeff on the show too, actually witnessed the accident that happened to his lovely wife, Deanna. And we'll be talking about that. Before we get into it, I'm going to give you 60 seconds to tell our listeners just a little bit about you.
We are two retired stay-at-home people, and we're involved in our church, and we have some great friends, and we just are grateful to be here. We've been through a lot in the past few years. I've learned so much about God's grace and deserved favor, you know, that we all receive. I have received it in abundance. We both have.
How long have you two been married?
This will be 7 years, coming in June.
And the accident that we're going to talk about was how many years ago?
It's been almost 4 years.
Okay, so you were relatively newly married when this happened.
Yes.
Still madly in love, which is awesome.
We still are.
We're honeymoon until we die.
Love it. That's awesome. All right, Deanna, take us back 4 years. Tell us what was going on that led up to your accident.
Well, it was just as the pandemic was clearing up, you know, we didn't have to wear masks anymore. We'd received stimulus checks, and we decided to stimulate the economy by buying a couple of electric, well, I got an electric scooter and Jeff got an electric bike. And we rode all over the place on them, all around town.
And kids.
Yeah, I mean, we just had so much fun getting out and doing that and exploring the neighborhoods. And the day of my accident, we had decided to ride up to the convenience store about a half mile away. We had become very comfortable on the scooter and on the bike. We were just zipping around, going to go get a soft drink and come back home. We were familiar with the streets, but we were going a little fast, probably about 25 miles an hour.
Did you have helmets on?
I was not wearing a helmet. Jeff was not wearing a helmet either. And I had good intentions. I kept thinking, I need to get a helmet. I need to get a helmet. I'm not 14 anymore.
It's hindsight, though.
Yeah.
It's just a PSA for everybody to remember to get their helmets and wear them.
We had taken a corner, and we were going pretty fast, and I hit a rock or a pothole and got the speed wobble. And I remember locking eyes with my husband, like, oh, no, this is not going to end well. Literally flipped over the handle rails of the scooter. I did about one good army roll because I know how to fall, but I was going so fast that on the second roll, I ragdolled. I like was slipping everywhere. And I very distinctly remember hearing the sound of my head as it hit the pavement. And that was the last thing that I remembered at that point, was just the horrible sound. I mean, Jeff heard it as well. It's traumatizing. I relive it constantly.
Jeff, let's hear your point of view on what happened right there.
Like she said, we had those vehicles, electric bikes. She was on the stand-up when you've seen those things, and there were they weren't just the cheap ones. They were nice. We had, you know, like we said, we'd gotten those the stimulus checks, and they weren't something we could normally afford because we're on disability, both of us. So we, you know, got something nice for ourselves, and she stimulated the economy a little bit. You should see this girl. She was, you know, it's like we were teenagers again, but we weren't wearing helmets. We were raised in a different time. We didn't wear helmets. Looking back, you know, we definitely will, but we'd just come around the corner. We were doing about 25. That's faster than a school zone, and you're totally in the open. She hit, I guess, like carved into a little pothole or something, but we were about 5 feet apart, side by side cruising, and I, you know, we locked eyes when she hit this pothole. Her handlebar started, ooh, like that. She just went over the handlebars, and she did do a tuck and roll. I give her 5 out of 5 stars on that first roll. But she, you know, inertia took over, and she just, like she said, ragdolled out and just boom, like that. Her head hit the pavement, and it did. It sounded like a watermelon hitting it. And, I mean, I'm sitting there. Like, it went into, like, Matrix, slow motion, you know, and there was absolutely nothing I could do to help because I was going just as fast as she was. And so by the time I had time to react to slow down, she had already hit and was tumbling, and her head hit, and it was if you can imagine the sound it made, that's exactly what it looked like. And that's my beautiful wife that I waited 43 years to find.
I can't even imagine. Deanna, what do you remember next?
Well, I sat up and remember seeing, I was in a beautiful, there was ambient light. It was very warm. It was very inviting. I felt no panic or fear. And my two grandmothers were standing before me. They were, I've seen pictures of them when they were younger. And they surpassed, their beauty surpassed that more than I can explain. They were ethereal looking. They were so beautiful. I was speechless. My maternal grandmother had reached her hand out to me. And she was just smiling and welcoming. I mean, I wanted to get up and hug her. Then I heard my husband's voice calling me. Maybe don't go. Please don't leave. I literally felt myself pull back and drop almost violently into my body. I didn't even realize I was out of my body at that point. I mean, I remember hitting hard. I came to and my hands were over my face. I was spread eagle, face down on the concrete. Blood was just, I was in a pool of blood, and it was just pouring out of my head. At that point, Jeff saw me moving or trying to move and told, you know, was telling me, don't move, the ambulance is on the way.
Well, I can tell how hard it is for Jeff to relive this, and we're going to give Jeff just a minute. In the meantime, Deanna, I would love more detail on what you saw. Now, your grandmothers that you saw, had you known them in this life? How long had they been gone?
I was so close with them. They were like the two, we were running buddies. One was Jewish and raised been going to the synagogue, and the other was a Christian, and I went to church with her. And I had grown up going to different churches my whole life, you know, just kind of trying to find my way. I finally found a church I was comfortable in when I met my husband. He introduced me to his church, and I had been baptized, but I was not really living the way I was supposed to be living. I was kind to people. I, you know, had gotten more serious about praying, but, you know, I didn't read my Bible. I went to church, but wasn't involved. I was lukewarm about it.
Sure. When did your grandmothers pass away?
One about, I'd say 20 years prior, my maternal grandmother, and then my paternal grandmother had passed away about 10 years prior.
Now, some people in their near-death experience talk about feeling like they traveled, whether it's through a tunnel or a dark space or anything like that. You didn't have that experience?
I did not have that experience. I didn't go through the light. I didn't go through a tunnel. I was just there in a place. And there were people behind my grandmothers, too, that I recognized but they were in the background. I believe I saw my father, who had passed away about 5 years before, and my other grandfather's, people I didn't know, but I knew I was familiar with them, or I knew who they were, but I didn't know their names, type of thing. And I was comfortable. The place was so warm and inviting. Felt I belonged there.
Do you remember anything else about what it looked like?
There was just a warm glow, like an amber, ambient light that surrounded everything. Everyone kind of had a glow to them. So I don't know if that was the ambient light that was being emitted from them or if it came from someplace else.
And what were you feeling as you're seeing this?
Oh, I was so thrilled to be there. I was so happy and calm. I mean, there wasn't a joyous moment. It was just, hey, you're here. You know, I'm here with you. And it was just very peaceful, very calming. I'll be honest, since this has happened, my fear of dying is like gone. Well, Jeff will explain that I didn't have a pulse when he checked. And for about 3 minutes, I was totally unconscious or dead.
That's a short estimate because I checked her pulse and her breathing multiple times. You know, I was in scouts and I was a lifeguard when I was young. I kept my head during this time. I didn't freak out. I'm not a, you know, I kept my head and I literally kept her head while this was going on.
She was hot, man.
And I checked her breathing and pulse the entire time while the engine was on their way. She was definitely not. Her vitals were not there for at least 3 minutes, possibly as long as 5, until the ambulance got there.
Let's go ahead and jump to your part right now, Jeff.
While she said that she was, you know, visiting with her grandmothers and possibly others, when she came to rest face down, she was not moving at all. And I was calling out, don't leave me, don't go. I was praying. I was, you know, begging God. It got to where I was getting pretty aggressive with it. I was angry. I got pretty angry about it, as you could probably guess most people would be, because, you know, we'd barely been married a little bit, maybe over 2 years at this point. I had waited so long. I was trying to keep her going. I was trying, you know, I didn't want to move her. I didn't know what injury she had, but besides what was blatantly obvious with her head, I didn't know if she'd injured her spinal cord or whatever. So I didn't want to try to flip her over and give her CPR or anything like that. I was trying to stop traffic. People were driving past and filming with their phones instead of stopping, or at least they were hiding their face with their phone. I don't know if they're filming or not. There's possibly footage of this out there somewhere. I don't know. I finally had to aggressively stop a car, and some Samaritan did stop and call an ambulance. I don't know what happened. I think the only phone we had with us was on her scooter mount, and that scooter was destroyed when she wrecked. When she said she came, I'll call it, please God, don't take her. You know, don't take her from me. Why would you wait this long to let me meet this woman and then take her from me? But literally when she said she came back to her body, if you've ever seen anybody hit with the paddles when they're in cardiac arrest and they arch like that, they arch their back, boom, when they get hit. And I talk with my hands a lot. I apologize. That may be a little too much for this.
It's okay. You just be yourself.
I don't know how else to act. I'm not an actor. But she arched her back from face down, like a trout or something. Wham! And then this is the funniest thing ever. When I was like, I started saying, don't move, don't move, don't move. Baby, baby. And I was so excited. I was crying and laughing at the same time. And to this day, I now have an issue. I laugh inappropriately when I should be crying. And I cry when I should be laughing. So if that happens during this podcast, please explain to your listeners that I'm not being an a-hole. I just I laugh when I'm supposed to cry sometimes. So PTSD, I don't know what else to call it. She said, no, babe, I don't want to go to the hospital. We just live a block away. Let's just go home. You know, because we have a fear of hospitals to this day because of other things. But she literally was gone for at least 5 minutes with no oxygen, no breathing, no heart, pulse, or nothing. And I'm not a certified doctor, but I know how to do things. We take care of ourselves here at the house. You know, we've got health issues, so we know how to take pulse and things like that. So I can tell you, she was gone. She was gone, dude, for a while. And so what she said she saw, even if there is nothing out there, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, if there's nothing else out there, what kind of miracle is in the brain to entertain it like that while you die? to make the passage out like that? What kind of accidental chemistry in the universe gives us that kind of a passage out when you die and then lets it reset itself to bring you back with that kind of a story?
Deanna, do you think that this was something like that, or do you think this was something very real?
I think this was very real. I mean, I know I was in a different place, and I know that I was not in my physical body, you know, here. And my biggest thing that I would like to share from my experience is that I know that when we die, there's someplace else that we go. There is something after this. And it's beautiful. It's peaceful. It's overwhelmingly calm. I felt no anger. I felt no pain. I can't think of a better word for the beauty that surrounded me or for the peace that I experienced. And that's when people talk peace that passes all understanding, that is what I felt. I have never in my life felt anything so close to that calm.
You described your grandmother's as looking beautiful. Can you give us any more insight into what they look like?
Well, other than, like I said, ethereal, they had this glow about them. They were young. I've seen pictures of my grandmothers when they were young, but they not only were young, they were an elaborate, beautiful extension of what I've ever seen pictures of.
That's awesome. Let's talk about the medical side for a minute. Oh, how badly were you injured? You went to the hospital, obviously. How bad were your injuries?
I had an 8 millimeter brain shift midline to the left side of my head. I later learned that they had given me a 10% survival rate that first night.
What out of 10?
1 out of 10 people survived my accident, injury within those first 24 hours. You know, I consider myself a miracle.
Me too.
So what was the recovery like? How long were you in the hospital? What did they do?
Not very long. I had a craniotomy the first night. They put some tubes in my head. I had several brain bleeds that we were very concerned about. They had put some tubing in my head to drain the fluid. I stayed not very long for that visit. And then I had another issue with swelling a few weeks later. Went back to another hospital that transported me to a specialized hospital with a neurologist, top neurologist here in Texas, a neurosurgeon. Had another craniotomy. I had like staples that go from the middle of my forehead all the way around the back of my head, right over my ear in a big horseshoe. My head was shaved. I had just half a head, spiky hair. And then I got all these times I had people praying for me. You know, people lifting me up in prayer constantly. People from my church visiting. I had come home again, and I remember somebody bringing me a meal so that I didn't have to cook, or Jeff didn't have to worry about cooking, and I didn't have to worry about eating his cooking. But
that might have been dangerous.
Yeah. Very dangerous.
And she looked at me and burst into tears. Here I am, half bald, staples in my head.
I see she looked rock and roll. That's just me.
But she started crying. She's like, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And I, at that moment, felt this joy in my heart. And I said, "You don't need to be sorry. I'm okay, and I've made it through this far. I'm the happiest I've ever been. You know, I'm married to this fabulous man, and I'm not down. Don't you be down. You know, just be grateful. Just know that there's this grace that we all receive if we just reach out for it. In fact, sometimes we don't have to be reaching out and just get showered upon us."
Yeah.
And then I got a post-operative infection.
MRSA.
MRSA in my skull.
Have you ever heard of that? MRSA?
Yeah, MRSA.
Yeah, that's super staph. That's what, yeah, that's.
And it was in my skull, my face swelled up, and I was going to the doctor to see my neurosurgeon the next day, but my eye had swollen up and gotten puffy. I literally could not see out of my right eye. And I went in to the doctor the next day. They said, you need to go in through the ER. You need surgery right now. So here's my third craniotomy. Each time I could have felt sorry for myself. And there are a couple times I did. Oh, I'm like, why me on this? Here I am trying to do right, be kind, and live right, pray, and follow Christ.
So why are you doing this to us? You know, that's the urge that you get.
Yeah, sometimes I've seen people just shake their foot. Why me?
Why is God doing this to us?
And people ask me, you know, well, don't you feel like you've been through? Yeah, I've been through more than what I feel is my fair share.
Yeah, but
I think that it's taught me to have faith in something way bigger than me, that God answers prayers, because each time I came through better and better. My memory was clearing up. You know, I was looking kind of funky with all these staples. I've got a big knot still on the side of my hand that we don't know what it is, but it was caused from the wreck. And I walked around for about 6 months with a hole in my skull that they had taken out, a credit card size hole in my skull, because it was during COVID and they were saving beds for people
in case there was
another COVID outbreak. So I had to walk around with a helmet on, a protective helmet.
Like they wear for the kids on the special needs kids. They had her, like, if she would have bumped her head on anything, she would have died.
I would have died.
And yet they had this entire floor of the hospital with empty beds just in case there was COVID.
It was an elective surgery to have a titanium plate put in my head.
Yeah, they said it was elective surgery, so they wouldn't give it to her.
But I finally had the cranioplasty, and I've not had any problems since then. My hair's grown back, finally. And I don't have the cool Mad Max hairdo anymore. I feel like I have this story to share with people that regardless of what happened, I mean, like I said, through this whole thing, I wasn't afraid each time that I was going to die. I knew that if I did, that I would be safe and I would be comforted and loved, and that I have a loving Father in heaven. He knows what's best for me. I've got a purpose here that he wants me to fulfill, or he wouldn't have brought me back. And so now I try to live my life as righteously as I can, as Christ-like as I can. And I backslide. I'm not saying I'm perfect by any means, but I don't live a day where I don't thank him and I don't have gratitude for being able to walk and talk and speak and be alive, because I could be so much worse. The midline shift was so bad that, I mean, I have seizures. I do have seizure disorder now.
You had one like 2 days
ago. Epilepsy. And that kind of is a pain, but I take medication for it. It seems to be relatively controlled. I'm not angry about it. I live with it. I think it makes me a stronger person. And I can be, hopefully, I mean, I've gotten to share this experience privately amongst friends and with some friends at church. And hopefully I can inspire people to live a good life, to be kind to others, and to know that there's a place to go. We just don't die and fall into a black hole. Growing up Jewish, you know, there was never a real definition between heaven and hell and whether or not we went anywhere. Jewish funerals are so depressing. And I know that I can leave this world and see my family, you know, that there are people that are there that are waiting for me to hang out, be there, and rejoice. I get overwhelmed by that at times, just knowing. But I'm so grateful for the grace of God that I'm here and that I'm doing everything I can to share this with others so they know that they too can have a place in the spirit world, in heaven, whenever you want to call it,
afterlife.
The afterlife, that we have our families there waiting for us.
There is something to look forward to. There is something to work towards. There is a reason for the season. There's a reason for her story, and there's a reason that I want to help her to get it out, because you never know when you're going to be riding your bike with your wife one day and she's gone. And be nice to people. Be kind to each other. I mean, you never know who that you're going to walk past in a grocery store, and just a kind word or a smile can keep that person from
your spouse
or to a stranger that is on the street, that is walking past or whatever, that you don't know what struggles people have, that you don't know what people are dealing with in their life, that they're one step away from just ending. You never know when your number is going to come up, what little pothole somebody symbolically is going to run over in their life, and just they're gone. Sometimes they don't get that chance to come back and tell their story.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of darkness in the world that people are dealing with every single day. I went through it. She went through it. Before we found each other, the valley of the shadow of death is deep out there, and they don't always know that there's footprints in the sand carrying them. Grandmama has that poem hanging on the wall everywhere, but not everybody has that grandma to read that poem to know that they're being carried through that. Does everybody out there know what I'm talking about? The poem on grandmama's wall?
Yeah, I think we know the poem of walking on the sand.
But this woman here, man, I saw her go through it, and she went through the hospital. She had tubes hanging out of her skull. I mean, they were telling me that I was going to have to find a place for her. I mean, the first couple of nights she was in there, they're like, if she makes it out of here, you need to find a hospital to put her in, because if she wakes up, she's not going to know you, probably. If she does, she may not even be herself. She may have a completely different personality. She may be angry, hateful, spiteful. She may be
unable to walk.
She might be locked. She might be paralyzed. You may have to change her diapers. And I said, you know what? All of the above, she's going home with me, because I'm going to take care of her.
I just want to thank you too so much, Deanna. Thank you for sharing this story. And Jeff, I want to give you the last word. I know how hard this has been for you. And the last word that I'd like you to share with us is, what are you grateful for today?
First of all, I'm grateful to have a Father in heaven that has given us this chance to be here on this earth to live this life. But I'm grateful most of all today for this chance to get this story out for people to hopefully get something good out of this. And I'm grateful for my wife, most of all. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her. She's cared for me, and I'm glad I was there to be able to help her get through this. And I'm grateful for you to help us get the story out on us. And I hope somebody, even just one person, can get something good out of it. Honestly. Know there's something good out there for y'all. There's something good waiting.
Thanks again for listening and sharing this podcast. Don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button and sign up for our newsletter at roundtripdeath.com. If you want to share your near-death experience, or if you have questions or comments about the show, send an email to eric@roundtripdeath.com. Until then, I wish you everything good that you're looking for in this life and the next.